At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
Make this new school year an opportunity for your kids to learn important life skills with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, while parents keep an eye on kids' money habits. Greenlight also helps families get into their fall routine with a chores feature that lets parents assign chores and pay kids' allowance when they check them off. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod. Greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of Punt Intended, a fantasy NBA dynasty podcast hosted by Sports Ethos. I am your host today, Rhett Bauer, and you can find me on Twitter at Rhett_Bauer. Follow the show at Punt Intended Pod, no spaces or underscore. And today is mailbag day. We've been teasing it for a little while, and I brought my man David Williams from Ethos Grizzlies on here. David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. That's it's off season. I hate that it's off season. But I also love it, right? Like as a dynasty player, I get to dive into draft prospects and really kind of hone in my roster. You know, I've got a couple teams that were really good during the regular season, but I couldn't get over the hump in the postseason. So I'm hoping that I can find that hidden gem in the draft, and I'm hoping that I can ask you the right questions today to help me get over that hump.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is a man very upset that his Grizzlies are not in the playoffs. And so he's just diving and coping with the draft film to cover up that. But we are excited to have him here and get into some of these questions, because you guys did send in quite a few of them. And there's some theory questions. There's some straight up, what would you do with this player? And then there's actually some trade questions coming in as well as we blast this on Twitter while we're recording. But first, please make sure you rate and review this wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Google, Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, whatever. We love seeing your feedback in those places. And if you don't want to send a review and you just follow me on Twitter, just send me a DM there and we can take your thoughts, suggestions, recommendations into consideration, because I want to make this what you guys want from it. All right. Number one question, and I got to start with this because it's Pacers related, so you can check that off your bingo card. Where do you rank Tyrese Halliburton as an overall dynasty player? And David, I'm going to throw it to you first because I want to know what you think about my guy Halliburton.
Extremely high on him. I was during redraft last year. If I was mid late first round, I was taking Halliburton if he was there. So dynasty wise, his value is extremely high. He's hard to get. So if you're going to go after him in a trade, you're going to have to pay for him, because whoever owns him understands. And in Indy, he's going to be the guy. So he's going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to be the decision maker, and he's proven, you know, good percentages. I would love to see him make a few more threes, but you know, like outside of that, he is going to be a very solid dynasty asset. I don't have a board, man. That's something I am fairly new. This is season number three of dynasty for me. So I've been playing redraft for a long, long time, and I just wanted the new challenge to get into dynasty. And it's truly a different game. And that's something that I didn't expect. You still use a lot of the same knowledge base, right? Like you still want guys that are good nine category guys, but when you're in a 24 team league, you're not looking at just top 75 or top 100 guys. Now you're really digging to find, you know, you're kind of working the fringes a little bit more. So it stretched me. I would venture to say that, you know, like probably top 10 area, I think. Oh, yeah. Would be a good place for Halliburton, because he's young, so he's going to bring you value for a long time. And I don't know where he ended up finishing overall this year, but I think he had to be pretty close to first round value, right?
Yes, Tyrese Haliburton was top 10 in per game value this year and was outside the top 50 in totals just because the Pacers decided to start playing for ping pong balls rather than winning basketball games, but they still somehow ended up with seventh rather than five or six, or I don't know. I don't want to go on a tanking rant. Like, how were you bad at tanking? It's just silly. Haliburton was actually seventh per game this year, which is pretty incredible. Like you said, definitely a top 10 dynasty asset. The thing for me is he doesn't do it on like really high volume scoring. He does it as an offensive engine that is relatively efficient and has like a 5-to-1 turnover assist to turnover ratio, which is just absurd for 9 cap value. So I definitely have him top 10. I think I have him up at 5. Last I checked, I'm going to pull up my dynasty rankings right now because he is so incredibly young. I have him at 5, right behind Tatum, right ahead of Shea, which I know has been an argument that I've had with Matt Lawson a couple times because Shea just gets those defensive stats. But as we've seen from him, those defensive stats come and go, whereas Tyrese hits those threes, his field goal percentage is almost neutral, free throw percentage is legit. He showed a level of shot creation that I don't think anybody expected from him. So I think you could pretty firmly have Haliburton in your top 10 and up as high as 5 would be pretty secure. I actually tried talking with my guy, Los Rebels, Zamora, in a 30-team league. He's in the pun intended league. And I actually tried to trade for Haliburton using Luka. And we just couldn't get the other pieces to fall into place. I had to try to go after my guy, Jaden McDaniels. So Zamora, if you're hearing this, Los Rebels, you can re-engage if you want. But yeah, so that's kind of the level of player I put Haliburton at, which is pretty exciting to have both as a Pacers fan, as a dynasty player, just looking at him. It's fantastic when you see a young player jump up like that.
So I have a question. This may be a tough one for you to answer.
Okay.
If Haliburton was not a Pacer, would he still be this high for you? Like, say that he
would
never left Sacramento, right? Because he still showed a lot of value in Sacramento, but this was one of the things where, okay, now he's got the keys. He'd still be a valuable dynasty piece, but do you think, like, is the fact that you're a Pacers fan, is that driving his rank up any for you?
No, the only reason that it drives his value is because I see how much he is the engine for this team. Like, it's not a fandom part of it. I almost exclusively do not do that. The only time I do is sometimes for like the fringe guys, like O'Shea Brissett, and you know, I was pretty high on Andrew Nembhard and apparently not high enough. But like, if Haliburton was still on the Kings, no, he would not be that high because he wouldn't be getting those 10 assists. He would still be in the 7-ish range. It would kind of end up being like a Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell situation where they both kind of hurt each other. But if you put Haliburton on literally any other team in the league where he's the primary ball handler, you could put it into put him in Charlotte, put him in Houston, put him in you know, where even a place like Boston, like even if he has like a Jaylen Brown next to him, he's still going to be way, way up there. And that's why it's so easy to have him that high. It's like, even if they do get a high usage player next to him, like I said, he doesn't rely on high volume scoring. He's still going to run everything. And guess what? That high usage player is going to have some really, really good looks because that's what Haliburton does. So my homerism does not come into play there, even with a couple Pacers jerseys over my shoulders. Let's move on to number. This is a question that is just going to hurt me on like a personal level. What to do with Lonzo, Ben Simmons, and Jonathan Isaac? And I don't know. Hold, probably. I bought Lonzo in one league for a 2024 first round pick from a team in a 30 team that is contending. I got second this year. That's a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer for me. Like, if he never plays a game again, okay. The 25th overall pick in next year's draft also might never play a game in the NBA that turns into fantasy relevance. Simmons and Isaac, you just got to wait for them to have a healthy stretch and turn in some good games and find a guy that believes, I would think.
Yeah, I own Ben Simmons in a couple of spots because I felt like I got him at a good price.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he's healthy and he's playing, he can obviously bring you value. But, you know, right now, that's a huge question mark with him. And so I offered him up. Somebody had 110 that they were looking to move, and I just threw Ben Simmons at them to see if they would be receptive to that at all, because in that league specifically, I think that somebody that I could get at 110 would benefit me. Maybe not as much as Ben Simmons, but I also, my faith in Ben Simmons is waning at this point. So it's tough with those guys because you know what they can bring if they're healthy. The problem is we've had a long stretch specifically with Isaacs and Simmons here where they just have not been on the floor, and Isaacs more so than Simmons, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, I mean, I've got him in way too many spots, and I just can't, you can't really do anything other than hold. Like I think I had somebody, I don't remember what the offer was. It might've been like I don't think it was Nimhard straight up, but it was something like that where it was like basically treating Simmons like a 150 ish asset. And I just can't do that. Like, we know his fantasy game is ridiculous if he could play. And so I think I just roll with the upside, unless you're in a really, really deep league and you just really want to get off that roller coaster. I couldn't blame you. But at 110, you're getting a guy like Cason Wallace or Grady Dick, or you know, you could even get into the Keontae George or Anthony Black situation, which is kind of a decent spot to be for a guy like Simmons, even though in that situation, I would hope that that maybe you get some lottery odds, which would obviously change the value of the pick, but then also that you can draft your team or draft your rookie after the NBA drafts. You can kind of see where those guys go, since that changes so much of the value for me.
Yeah. That brings up an interesting, you said something, draft your guy after the NBA draft. Are you in leagues where you guys do your rookie draft prior to the NBA draft?
No, because I won't be in any leagues that do it like that.
Okay. Maybe we don't either. We wait until, in some of my leagues, we wait till after summer league. Some of them were doing it before summer league, but I was like, man, that is weird. I would not want to, you know, specifically like number one this year is easy money, right? You know who you're taking if you've got number one, and I'm pretty locked in at number two on yep. Scoot. Like, I personally, like, for an NBA team, I've convinced myself that I think I would probably take Scoot over Wembanyama. And I know that that's a crazy hot take just because of the overall ceiling that you see from Wembanyama. But at his age, Scoot is able to manipulate the pick and roll at a level that's far beyond his years, and that's going to translate at the NBA level. And then if we're talking like fantasy wise, Scoot is going to have, I think he's going to have elite defensive stats. So I think that he's going to be a really good, that you're going to have early on in his career, I think you're going to have the same problems that you always have with young guards, turning the ball over. Like, the efficiency is not going to be as high as you would like it to be. But I like a lot of the tools that Scoot has. And I think that a guard that can run the pick and roll as well as he can completely change a franchise. And I just feel like the floor on him is safer than the floor on Wembanyama.
I don't disagree as vehemently as a lot of people might. I think that as a reality player, Scoot will end up pushing Wembanyama because he is an offensive engine. Like, he is an absolute, like, as a physical, like, just looking at him as a 19-year-old, you're like, if this is what you are at 19, like, what does your prime look like in 6 years? Your physical prime look like in 6 years? He is strong and big, and at 6'4 with like a 6'9 wingspan is legit, and he is making some reads, like you said. So as like, you know, Wimby is in a class of his own as far as like the impact that he could have on an NBA court. The bodies of that, like, that type of body is just terrifying. Like, it just genuinely is. Whereas Scoot is more traditional in that regard. There's a ton of guys who do great things in the league with his kind of body. And you know that a primary ball handler is the hardest thing to find in the NBA. And those are the players that change your franchise. And I think that a guy like Chet and Wimby, it's going to be interesting to see what they do for teams moving forward. But I do think for fantasy, the blocks that Wembanyama is going to get alone is just going to be enough. Like that is just going to do it. I think Scoot would have to have like 12 assists a game to equal the amount of blocks that I think Wembanyama is probably going to get in the NBA. So that I think that's a little bit for fantasy. I don't see that working out, but if you have injury concerns, I can't really talk you down off of that. And so I could see it if you want to make that argument. I still think it's pretty clearly Wimby, which kind of gets into another question from my guy Huntrell, who's always active on Twitter. And I appreciate that. He said, the hype surrounding Wimby is intense. Are you holding and drafting 101, or are you selling for a package? If selling, what are you targeting? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks. I would say that Wembanyama is pretty firmly like a top five dynasty asset right now. So am I trading Luka for Wembanyama? No. Am I trading Luka for Wembanyama plus? Still probably no, but it's definitely more of a hesitation there. I think it would depend on what somebody is offering you. I've had some people where it's like, oh, I can get I can get Ivy and 7 overall. No, that's not really close, actually. I think somebody said it's like, oh, I can get 103, 105, and a couple future firsts. Also, still no. Like, you would need to get a legitimate top 20 player and then more on top of that. Like, if you're not getting a Chet, a Paolo, Garland's probably slid outside of the top 20 right now, but like guys along that level of youth upside production and just value across the league, you just shouldn't do it. Like, you should probably just make the pick and go from there, especially when you know it's Wimby. So it's not like you have to be in a rush. Like, you can still draft him at 101 and somebody's still going to want to trade for him just like they did before the draft. So you have so much time. The hype is going to get insane. Summer league is going to be insane. So if you are going to make a move, they better treat it like a top three dynasty asset, which I don't think a lot of people understand the price that takes.
So I had 1-1. I got lucky in a lottery. I finished three slots outside of the playoffs, end up with 1-1, and I traded it. I traded 1-1. I had a roster with some guys that had some injuries, and I had some pretty good pieces, but I was like, I really want to compete in this league. Like, I was right there with the roster that I had, and I'm like, if I can trade this for a package that gets me a couple guys, that's going to make me competitive. And I gave up Wimby for, it was Alperen Şengün, Jaylen Brown, and Zach LaVine. That was a package I got for 1-1. There was nothing else attached to 1-1. It was 1-1 for those three. And I ended up flipping. Like, as soon as I finish that trade, I get an offer for Zach LaVine and Şengün. Guy offered me Joel Embiid. So I flipped essentially 1-1 for Joel Embiid and Jaylen Brown. And I'm happy with that. Like, am I going to regret it in a few years?
Almost certainly.
Like, it's, you know, like, does Embiid win the MVP and then have like a huge regression? I don't expect that to happen, but I wanted to compete, and that move allowed me to put myself in a position to compete. So I think a lot of it, right, like, your team composition has to make a difference on what you're going to take for that. But the way that I approach it, I had some other offers for it, and I just flat out told the guys, I'm like, this is, if you're sending me an offer, you're sending me an offer for a guy like Luka or a guy like Jokic, like, that you better come with a package like that, or I'll keep 1-1. And so that I felt pretty good about the Şengün, and not that I was looking to move him after that trade, but when the guy sent it over, I'm like, yeah, I'll take a top five guy on my roster for next year to go along with the other pieces that I have, because I think that can make me pretty competitive.
I believe I said no to that when you asked me about it, but I am notoriously lower on Şengün than most, but turning him into Embiid and Jaylen, that's pretty darn good. Like, that's the type of deal that I need. Like, that is a top 20, top 15-ish dynasty asset in Embiid, and then a top 30 to 35-ish dynasty asset in Jaylen. okay. And those are two very good competing pieces. The last couple of years, I put this out on the pun intended Twitter feed. I was like, I'm so impatient when it comes to rebuilding. So I have a lot of teams that will have bad picks and I will immediately move them. Like the last 3 years, I've traded the picks that became Chet, Paolo, Jabari. And then I think it might have ended up being Mobley too. But like it was still lottery chances. So it was kind of a weird evaluation system. But I got AD, Harden, Ja, and like a couple other things. And so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna do that. Like, oh, and then this last one I traded like five-ish for Jabari Smith, Terry Rozier, a 23 first and a 24 first. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. I've got a team that's built to win. I just happen to have a bad pick. And so that's the sort of thing. And I think those discussions are always so fascinating because it is eye of the beholder. And it is always something where some guy's going to get psyched about a prospect and they're going to go all out trying to get them. And so if you can capitalize on that, it's always a fun thing to do. And maybe you'll regret it. But if you win the title in the next couple of years, that's kind of what we play for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So next question, this one's from Scott. He's in actually, I think, all of the dynasty leagues that I'm in. His is about Kevin Porter Jr. He said, are you bullish or bearish on KPJ?
Longtime listeners of this podcast know this answer, and it does not get any different with extra years on it. I am not a Kevin Porter Jr. fan. I don't think he's a starting player in the NBA. He's best suited as a sixth man, and he has I think fully non-guaranteed contract for the next couple of years. Like if at any point the Rockets are like, nope, done. He's just gone. He'll still get signed because he has been putting up some numbers and he is an NBA player. There was some concern when he got to Houston that he wasn't because he had the locker room issues and he had some issues at USC, I believe, as well, even before his draft that caused him to slide. And I'm just not really interested in rostering players that have like extreme character concerns that caused them to slide in a significant way in the draft that also presented themselves in the NBA. Like if you've got issues as a college student, like as a teenager, okay, that happens. You make mistakes. But then if you get into the NBA, you're making millions of dollars and you're on an NBA team getting NBA minutes and you still have issues, that is a red flag to me. And so I think he's worked past that a little bit. I'm not trying to say he still has that sort of stuff, but I wouldn't have Kevin Porter Jr. on my roster because I would have sold him high each of the last 2 years. But if you do still have him, I would be trying to move, even though it's possible he's still the starting point guard, quote unquote, for the Rockets this year, assuming they don't get Scoot or Harden.
All right. So we kind of already addressed this, but I think I want to reword this a little bit. It's about Wimby, and you were talking a little bit about his value. The question was specifically like, would you trade your best player to move up to get Wibanyama? So if we're talking one for one trade, where's that line for you? Like who would name off some guys like 100% not trading this guy straight across for Wibanyama?
I don't think I'm doing Jokic, Luka, LaMelo. I'm probably not doing Tatum, Halliburton, or Shea either. Just because those guys are 25 and under and legit cornerstones for their franchises that are very durable. They play both sides of the ball. Halliburton, not so much both sides of the ball, but he's an engine that's not going anywhere. And they are like MVP, all NBA level players. I'm just not really interested. And they have fantasy friendly games. Like all of those guys finished like top 10-ish. Like I know Wimbanyama is going to be insane if he hits, that makes it sound like I don't believe he will. Cause I believe he will, but like, I'm just not interested in taking a gamble when I know for a fact that I have a top 10 per game producer that's under 25 years old. Like I'm sorry, maybe I'm wrong. I'll gladly take Tatum, Halliburton, or Shea for that sort of stuff. And I would consider Anthony Edwards like flirting with that line. I just don't think his fantasy game is going to be that friendly, like top 10 friendly. Even though I love Ant as a player, I think that's the kind of line I would have. Like, I would trade, I think I would trade Giannis for him, for Wimby, if I had a team that was kind of trending down or wasn't like an absolute favorite to win. I would trade Cade for Wimby, Trey for Wimby, Mobley, Embiid, Mitchell, yeah, Booker, Garland, Paolo, Towns, AD, yeah, pretty much it's those six, Jokic, Luka, LaMelo, Tatum, Halliburton, Shea, and Ant. I could hear an argument for, but I would do it.
Yeah, I think that, so for me, Anthony Edwards is definitely a yes. Like, I like his game, but I just think, you know, we were talking about the blocks earlier and how much weight those blocks are going to carry.
Yep.
And that's definitely... And, you know, I say that being one that traded Wembanyama, but like my mindset behind that trade was being competitive. Like, I took over, I came into this league, I was part of a district, like a dispersal draft. And so my roster was crap. And I moved some pieces around. I really like Bam. And so I made a move to get Bam. And I'm like, okay, he's a guy I'm going to keep on my roster because of his age and what he brings. And then I'm going to move some other pieces around. Ended up getting some picks and getting lucky, like hit the lottery. I had like the seventh or eighth worst odds to get the number one pick and landed it. And so that allowed me to put my team in a better spot. Let's go to a Twitter question. We had put out the feelers before we started recording. How about Tyrese Maxey? It's a question. Quirks Z on Twitter asks, Maxey potential with Harden still on the roster?
I haven't been very high on Maxey relative to the field, I would say. I have a tough time with guys who rely on scoring and volume. Like, I don't think Maxey's peripherals are very good. I don't think he's a great rebounder. I don't think he gets a ton of steals. He's obviously not going to get a ton of blocks. His efficiency is pretty good for a guard. But, like, what if Harden is still on the roster? Yeah, he gets less defensive attention, but he also plays at Harden's pace, which is not Maxey's pace. Maxey likes to fly up and down the floor, which is awesome, but Harden is obviously going to be super deliberate. I think his ceiling is still relatively high. He's 23. He's not even 23 years old yet. So, like, obviously he's going to be hitting his prime way after James Harden is no longer on this roster, whether he gets moved or leaves this offseason or not. But I don't, like, do we think that Tyrese Maxey can get to like a Fred VanVleet level of fantasy production where it's just like elite steals, elite threes, elite assists, elite free throw percentage? Obviously I'll have better field goal percentage than that, but like, you know what I mean? Like, do you see him getting to that kind of level? I don't. And that's kind of why I'm a little bit lower on him than most, but he's still very, very good, very young. So I could be wrong.
I think that, you know, the biggest thing in fantasy that happens, that there are some, you know, across nine categories, and we're, you know, when we're just, for me, when I'm discussing it, I play primarily nine cat leagues. So guys, to get to that level, like that first round level, you can't be terrible in defensive stats. You can't have super high turnovers and low efficiency. So your free throw percentage matters. Your field goal percentage matters. And if you look at Tyrese Maxey, like the field goal percentage for a guard, you know, 40, he's 48% for his career. The free throw percentage, it's low volume, but 86%, like that's okay. But then when you get into his defensive stats, he's combining for one total defensive stat. And when I'm doing a redraft league, I won't draft a guy if his combined defensive stats don't add up to 1.5, I'm not touching him, because those, every category has weight. And I just don't think that Maxey's going to be elite enough in those other categories because of his lack of defensive stats. Like, Halliburton is not elite in the defensive stats, but he's going to get you 10 plus assists. That's assist are hard to come by. He's going to have low turnovers. Like, there's going to be things that carry Halliburton's weight. And I just don't know that Maxey is going to have another stat other than scoring that is really going to drive his value up. You know, the 2.73s, that's a nice stat, but you look at rebounds, it's less than three. His assist, right at three. Those numbers are not going to elevate him enough. I do like him, but he's not a guy that I would have to roster at all.
Halliburton had two combined defensive stats this year, for the record, 1.6 steals, 0.4 blocks. But I'm just poking fun at you. Anyway,
no, I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
you know, what did Freddie Van Vliet average?
I'm pretty sure he's been at like 2.5 for the last 3 years. Like 1.8 steals has been pretty average for him, and he gets a surprising amount of blocks for a guard. So he's definitely over like 2.2, 2.3. So he's up there. One thing that I'm looking at, okay, so like, look at Maxey, small guard. Like, is he going to be Dame Lillard? Because like, that's the kind of production he's going to need to have to like really hit the fantasy ceiling that it seems like people are expecting from him. 32 points, four and over four threes, but even Dame, 4.8 boards, 7.3 steals, 7.3 assists, 0.9 steals, 0.3 blocks, 46 from the field, 91 from the line. Like, is that what Maxey's going to do? Is just be points, threes, assists, and free throw percentage? Is he going to weigh that heavily on all those categories that he just locks in some fantasy value that elite? I have my doubts. Quarks just came through with Ayton outlook. My Ayton outlook is way down. I don't know what the heck is going on with him. For fantasy, it's probably not going to matter because he's probably going to play 30 minutes a night no matter where he's at, and he's probably going to get 20 and 10, decent efficiency, no threes, okay free throw percentage, and he might get a block. Like, he's going to have okay fantasy stats, but golly, that man looks absolutely disinterested in playing basketball at a high level and is still having issues with Monty Williams. And so I would just be watching that a little bit as the offseason goes through, because it seems like he's due for a move, but maybe that'll help revive his career. But it also could just be he just doesn't like playing high level basketball.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned, I guess, as you with him. Like, I can definitely see some of the points that you're making, but I just kind of go back to the way that Phoenix treated him, man. You're like, they did not offer him a contract until somebody else did. Like, that they were trying to negotiate, and I get it. Like, it's kind of a semi, like, it's a business, and they were making a business decision. But it's like, yeah, they matched that deal and they kept him on their roster because that's the way that the league is structured. And it's like, yeah, they have him there, but did they really want him to stay there? And I think that weighs on a guy, you know, like, if you're looking at it, for me, if I was in that situation, it's like, okay, if you were okay with signing me this deal, why did you wait until somebody else offered this to put the deal on the table? And I know there are a lot of logistics that go into that, that we don't know what was on the table for him and what he turned down and all of that. But I think that can definitely affect it. So I definitely would not be against a change of scenery, but if you see the same kind of lackluster effort from him with a change of scenery, then I would be moving off of him as quick as possible.
Bigs are hard to find. So like, in deep leagues, I would definitely be still happy to have him because he's pretty decent percentages. Like I said, obviously great field goal percentage and doesn't kill your free throw percentage, and centers are hard to find. So I'm not like panicking, but I used to think that he could be like up inside the top 30 for a dynasty asset, because I thought like, oh man, he got 1.5 blocks. If he picks up his volume everywhere else, he has okay passing, just like he gets an assist or two. Like, that's a really good fantasy player, but it just does not seem like he is the type of player that is like a lock to be like a franchise type guy. Obviously he's not a franchise player, but you know what I mean? Like, he's not in the big three, so to speak. It seems like he's kind of more on that, like, honestly, kind of like the Miles Turner level player. Like, is Miles Turner in your big three? You're probably not thrilled with that, but like, he's a really good player, really valuable player in real life and fantasy. So and that's
in
just
a
kinda,
deep league, he can win you a category by himself.
Yeah. And, you know? And again, yeah, like I said, efficiency obviously is a big deal. And so not killing your free throw percentage is awesome, but definitely not panicking, but definitely not as optimistic as I once was. We've got Robin asking, should we be worried about Brandon Miller's associates and legal issues? I don't really want to give an opinion on this. I don't think so, because he didn't get charged with anything. And I did mention earlier that, like, hey, when you're a teenager and you're in college, mistakes happen. Obviously, this is a huge, huge mistake. And bringing guns to anything in that way is just crazy, crazy dangerous, and obviously a poor decision on his part. But I don't know that much about what happened. I'm sure NBA teams are going to do their due diligence. And I think NBA teams willing to invest in him will give us all the confidence that we need as dynasty managers to do the same. I don't think he should be knocked too far because of that, even as somebody who really takes all this off-court stuff seriously in my fantasy teams. And I just will not roster certain players, but I don't really have that much of an issue right now with Brandon Miller, unless something else comes out or there's some piece of this that I'm missing.
So let me flip that a little bit for you. Dynasty draft wise, where does Brandon Miller rank for you?
I think I have him 4 right now. I think I have him behind Amen Thompson. Okay. I still haven't decided yet. It's like, it's 3, 4, 5 for me. Jairus Walker, Amen Thompson, and Brandon Miller. There's such a variety of fantasy games there, but they're all going to be producing across every level. And then my guy Taylor Hendricks is going to be up there as well. But I'm not taking him over Scoot in fantasy. Absolutely no chance. 1 and 2 is locked in for me there. But I also don't see him falling too far back, because he is the player that every team needs. And so, you know, like, even as a dynasty manager, like, he's going to play. Like, and he's going to play a lot, and he's going to get shots up. And he showed some passing. He's got defensive tools. Like, the player is there. The building blocks, the tools are all there. So I'm not really letting that change my mind as much as far as a fantasy draft goes.
All right, go to another Twitter question. This is from at Grizz Tony. I was in one dynasty league with him, and then over the break here, he's joined a few others. Are you taking Darius Garland or pick 1-3?
If 1-3 has lotto odds that typically come with 1-3, I'm taking 1-3. But if it's
like, it's already lottery's done.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah,
so it's okay. Darius Garland or pick 3.
I am probably taking Garland still, but I wouldn't argue too much with you if you wanted to take 3. I think if I could get some intel around the league and find out if somebody was going to take Brandon Miller 2nd, that I would absolutely take 3 and go with Scoot and be psyched about that. But it's the same thing as what we were talking about with Wimby, right? It's the certainty of Darius Garland being a 23-year-old starting point guard that is efficient and plays with and without the ball. Even though his fantasy contributions this year were a bit muted because he played next to Mitchell, he was just inside the top 50. So that's obviously not great for the third best prospect in this draft that does have some fantasy friendly games in it. But I think I'm still probably taking Garland, but admittedly big fan of the certainty over the mystery box when it comes to players of Garland's caliber as dynasty assets.
All right. One more from Scott. He says, who are some 2nd or 3rd year players that you would expect to see a breakout from next year?
Yeah, I think if you guys listened to me last year when I did something like this around the trade deadline, I said Trey Murphy, which score one for the good guys. And so my candidate along those lines, I think, so for 3rd year players, I think it's going to be Jalen Johnson. We saw him in the playoffs, and we saw quite a drastic shift from Nate McMillan to Quinn Snyder, which is crazy. Who would have thought that Nate McMillan doesn't play his young players and stunts their development and doesn't actually care to do anything but win regular season games and then flame out in the playoffs? I'm not a salty Pacers fan. I'm just glad the rest of the league is seeing it. And so he's got a very friendly fantasy game. Quinn Snyder trusted him in some big, big spots, and it seems like the Hawks are going to do something, right? Like, they're going to do something, whether it's Clint Capella and Onyeka Okongwu, maybe it's John Collins finally getting up out of there. I don't know, but Jalen Johnson would be a good one. It might be a little tough to get him out of there, get him from his manager right now because he did play well in the playoffs, which is always it does a great deal for a guy's fantasy stock when that happens. Another guy, do you have somebody off the top of your head that you want to toss out there?
No, I didn't really have anybody. He sent this question, and there's some guys, I don't know, like Jalen Johnson, I think is a great example, because I felt like he's just been buried. He's been buried on that team. And it's like, yep, when is he going to get his run? And the talent is there. And that's what you look at. The guys that have the talent, that, you know, like their first round picks, and they just haven't had the opportunity. And then, you know, you could also argue on the opposite side of that is, well, if they have the talent, why are they not getting the opportunity?
But that's where the context of knowing who that coach is matters a ton.
Yep. And that I've had this conversation about McMillan. Tom Thibodeau is a guy that doesn't really like to play young guys. And I own Obi Toppin in almost all of my dynasty leagues, because I believe when Obi Toppin actually gets unleashed, that he is going to be, like, there's going to be some volume driven stuff there with him, but I think that he's going to bring fantasy value, because I think his field goal percentage is going to be good. I think he's going to rebound the ball well. And I'm just holding on to him because Thibodeau is a guy, like, look at all the talent, look at the guys that he has on that roster that he hasn't been playing. And then when you finally see IQ get some run, what has he done with that? And that's all. It's not about the talent that those guys have. It's about the coaching strategy. So I don't know what year is Toppin now? Toppin's like year
four or five. Yeah. I think he'll be going into four next year.
He's not a second or third year guy, but I think that, you know, Toppin has seen a few more minutes from Thibodeau, and I think that you get more of a run next year from him. But I also never want to make a prediction on a Thibodeau team because, you know, it's just tough.
Yeah. I'll be holding RJ Barrett stock until he's no longer playing next to Julius Randle on a franchise that cares more about the sixth seed than developing the third overall pick. But another couple of guys, maybe not as much of a breakout as Jalen Johnson, and guys that are pretty well known at this point. I still believe in Chris Duarte being a legitimate NBA player, like maybe not starter, but contributor, and his value is incredibly low right now. And I would not be surprised if the Pacers moved him in a draft night deal or just in general throughout this offseason. Obviously, he's 24 years old. Maybe he's actually 25 now. Obviously, that's a very old player, so I'm not saying go out and get him at all cost. Moses Moody's starting to get a little bit of extra run, which is awesome. Corey Kispert is a guy who gets you decent field goal percentage and free throw percentage with threes and points. I always like guys like that at the end of my bench in deeper leagues. Last guy of that group, I'll never give up on Isaiah Jackson. It's not going to happen. But transitioning over to second-year players, we're going to avoid all of the obvious names. It's like, hey, guess what? Jalen Williams is going to be better next year, and so will Keegan Murray. Dalen Terry, Usman Jang, and who's the other one I was just looking at?
I actually have one.
Go ahead.
So, Usman Garuba.
There you go.
And this is like, he is the best defender on that Rockets team.
Low bar, but yep.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a good defender, period.
Yes, he is.
And I think that his defensive stats alone are going to bring him fantasy value. I don't think he's the guy that you're going to see just like blow up and be like a walking double-double or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, we're talking dynasty, deeper dynasty leagues. He's a guy that can really help you around the fringes. And I think that his defensive stats alone, because Udoka and his defensive mind, I think Garuba is going to get a lot of run with that team. And you saw him getting some minutes at the end of this year. And so he's a guy from the Rockets that I think you could see get a bump in playing time, and that's going to translate into him giving you maybe even borderline elite defensive stats.
Yeah, I can see him being along the lines of like a Nerlens Noel type fan favorite of the podcast, where it's just like, I don't think he'll get to Nerlens level because I don't think he's going to get 25 minutes a game. But, you know, Nerlens was getting by on 1.7 blocks, one steal, and elite field goal percentage, and low volume free throws. Like, that is all you need to get some sort of fantasy value out of a guy. So I like that call. generally hesitant to invest in players on a team like Houston that's just got so much talent. They don't know what to do with it, and they're pretty dysfunctional. But it seems like they're going in a direction that might clear some things up in that regard. So we will see how that goes. Another guy that obviously I love Dyson Daniels, but I think he's a bit too high profile. Jabari Smith, I'd be trying to buy just because I believe in him as an impactful real life player. And he's better than what he was with the Rockets, where they didn't run anything for him, which is just wild. And then I don't think there's anybody else who's going to be like extremely, extremely relevant. Christian Coloco is a maybe, depending on the direction that the Raptors go in. If they decide to really, really pivot, then that's going to be huge for him. Josh Minot for the Wolves is awesome, but I think he's pretty, pretty well discussed at this point because his G League contributions have just been pretty unbelievable. But I think that's kind of it of those guys, unless somebody else is standing out to you as we, as you go through it.
No, I was kind of flipping through just to see if anybody else jumped off the page. Obviously, like as a Grizzlies fan, I would love to be like, oh, Zaire Williams is going to be that guy.
And I do,
yeah. Like, I do believe that he has a better year, but I don't know that a better year for him equals fantasy relevance.
Right.
Although I'm not giving up hope because I do own him in a few places, but he's not a guy that I'm going to sit on here and be like, yeah, he's going to be your breakout player.
Right. And then I will give this question, even though I already answered it in the DMs. My guy Los Rebels again comes through asking if I still take Mark Williams over Shaedon Sharpe in the rookie draft. And we actually talked about this already, so I don't want to linger on it too long. But I had Mark Williams 8th, and that was in like mid to late June. Obviously, things changed a lot since then, and they changed even the next month where I dropped Mark Williams down to like 12th and I moved Shaedon Sharpe up a good amount. I think we are looking back with rose-colored glasses on the downside of Shaedon Sharpe. Like, we did not know anything about him. And so would I go back and change it? Obviously. But will I change my pre-draft process getting to that point where we didn't have any information? Probably not. Like, I'll be a little bit more willing to believe in players like Shaedon Sharpe when a guy who is doing draft stuff for ESPN leaves that position and then goes to take a job with the Portland Trailblazers, who just happened to be in the range to draft Shaedon Sharpe, who he was notoriously high on. Like, yeah, I'll believe in a guy that has a scout who does this for a living put kind of all of his eggs in that basket. Like, he literally put his money where his mouth is. So if I see any moves like that, yeah, but I don't think we're going to have a prospect like that come through. I mean, maybe we will, but what are the chances we see a guy where it's like, hey, you've got 6 high school games to go off of, and he might be a top 5 pick? Thoughts? Like, I don't see a situation where we get that again. And if we do, maybe I'll try to learn something from it, but I'm still probably going to be hesitant to take a guy like Shaedon Sharpe top 5 in a draft where there are good fantasy prospects when we don't know anything about him.
Yeah, I was digging in numbers here, just kind of looking to see. And, you know, he had that run whenever by like the last 10 games of the season,
yep,
where he's taken, you know, 19 field goal attempts a game, shooting 46%. Yeah, like that's if they lean completely into a rebuild, is he going to get that kind of volume? I think a full rebuild still like Anthony Simons is still going to be on that team, and so the odds of him getting this many shots in a game when that team is healthy and not in full tank mode, I don't think that you see that. So, like, I don't feel like it was super far-fetched to have a center who is going to have good field goal percentage. He's going to get you blocks, and he's not going to absolutely destroy your free throw percentage. Like, that's not something like, oh my God, I can't believe that you've done that. Yeah, like Shaedon Sharpe kind of turned a corner at the end of the season, but I'm willing to bet you right now that you're not going to see him average 18 shots a game. Like that he's not going to have that kind of volume to bring that kind of value. Not for, I mean, maybe down the road, maybe as he develops, he ends up being that guy. But I think that that's a few years down the road. Like in the next 2 or 3 years, you're not going to see that kind of volume from him, if ever.
Yeah, I am high on Sharp as an athlete and as a shot creator. The way he moves, the way he jumps, and the way he's been able to get his shots off at the NBA level, despite not playing organized basketball for quite some time, is extremely impressive. You can't deny that. And I would not put a bet on Anthony Simons guaranteeing to be on the Blazers going into next season. I think they are due for some shakeups, and it seems like they want to get Sharp in there as much as possible, and they only have so many assets to do it. So that's another team that's going to be absolutely fascinating to watch. I went through and I did not see any more questions at the moment. So unless you have another one, I think we are about ready to wrap this up.
I've got two, actually. The junk time. It was another Twitter question.
Okay.
This one's very specific. It's a trade, but since we're taking questions, it is a mailbag. We'll go ahead and throw it out there. Junk time asks, which side of this trade do you prefer? And we don't. Number one, we don't know how many teams are in this league, so that's kind of tough to weight it. But we're gonna throw it out there anyway. Jrue Holiday and Bojan Bogdanovic versus PJ Washington, Quentin Grimes. The ninth overall lottery odds in this year's draft, and then pick number 45 overall.
That's PJ side very easily for me. I think Drew is obviously the best player in this group, but I think PJ Washington is still somehow has an underrated fantasy game because Charlotte is an absolute disaster. But I like Bojan Bogdanovic is kind of a non-factor for me in this. Like I would take Grimes over him immediately. So then you're looking at PJ Washington and the ninth best lottery odds in a class that has some prospects that I kind of like out to the 10 spot. You have odds to maybe move up to 1 through 4. Drew is obviously on the back end of his career. Like if you're a contending team and you want to go in and get Drew, I can see it, but I would just want a piece that I trusted more than Boyan in this regard, because I think giving the ninth pick for Drew, like Grimes and nine for Drew, that's a considerable deal, I think, for some people. If you found the right manager, I personally wouldn't do that, but my teams are more often built to compete. But I would take the PJ Washington side of this fairly easily without any of the context that usually ends up mattering in this sort of stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And lottery odds are just that. You
Yep.
never know. Just the possibility, like say you got ninth best and you end up winning that lottery. Well, then you got PJ Washington, Grimes, and Wembanyama for Jrue Holiday. And
Yeah.
even beyond that, if you get a guy like Brandon Miller, either one of the Thompson twins,
Even a guy like
who's
Asor could fall to nine.
Yeah,
Like,
like who's the kid out of I can't think of it, Whitmore. He's having
oh
the
yeah,
issues, like
Villanova.
he's
Yep.
having some injury issues right now. But
I think that
like
was
I
Whitehead. I think it was Jarique
Whitehead,
Whitehead. Yeah,
yeah,
from Duke.
that's who I was thinking of.
Yep.
I do that.
Yeah,
That's
yeah, yeah.
exactly, yeah, got them mixed up. My apologies. But like I like his game, and I think that he maybe not year one is going to bring any value, but you can find a guy in that, even if you stay at nine in this draft, you can find a guy that's going to have a fantasy friendly game. And then that trade is completely lopsided to that PJ Washington side. And then the last question that I want to ask you, this is kind of more of, I guess, a theory question or maybe strategy, kind of depending on how you want to look at it. One of the things that I've really struggled with transferring from the redraft leagues into Dynasty is determining value of picks versus the value of players. And so when you're addressing that, I know you said most of your teams are kind of geared to compete in leagues, but if you're in a league and say you take over a team and it's just a terrible team, so you're trying to rebuild, how do you determine value? Like what are some parameters that you would use whenever you're determining value of a pick?
Lottery odds obviously matter a ton. I think the size of the league matters a ton. Your roster, like how far away are you from contending? Like, did you tank? Did you actively tank? Because a lot of people did this year. I was one of them. I fully admit I have LaVine, Ingram, DeJounte, Fultz, Lauri Markkanen, OG Anunoby, all in a 30-team league, and I had the sixth worst record. And I traded that for Jabari Smith-Terry Rozier. So I was going hard. But like, if you have a team like that, it was, I didn't tank like that hard all the way through. There were some injuries early on in the year where it was like, all right, I'm trying to win and I'm still bottom 10. So we'll just stop trying to win. But yeah, so like if you have, for instance, there's another team that I took over and then dropped the league. It had Ayton as the best player and then Sexton as the second best player. In that situation, and I had 101 and like 108. In those situations, I'm probably not trading either of those picks because I'm so far away from contending. It does not matter. I need to take the shot at Wembanyama. I need to take a shot at a guy like Asar Thompson being there at 8 or Whitmore falling. Like I need to take as many shots as possible unless there's somebody who is trading me a player who could realistically be in the draft class. Like, right? Like Darius Garland could be a player in this draft class. Like obviously that's very old. That's not a great comparison, but like if you got a guy who's offering like, hey, Anthony Edwards for 2 overall. Yes, I'm taking Anthony Edwards. If you get like Chet, Scotty Barnes, you know, even a guy like Giddy, who is very young, Jabari Smith, Jalen Durant, like there are guys who are young that I would trade picks for if I really liked their game and I didn't like where the pick was. But the lottery odds matter a ton. And the historical precedents for players that are picked number 1 overall, number 2 overall, number 3 overall. I'm actually going to be working on a tool for this for Sports Ethos that I'm hoping can be out this offseason. Cause I think it's fascinating looking at the last 10 drafts and seeing where those players ended up as dynasty assets and as like per game producers. And the history of number 1 overall picks is very, very good. You are almost guaranteed a top 25 dynasty asset from a number 1 overall pick. And that is being like, that's being conservative on the projection. So people get psyched up about picks this time of year. I value them because you value them. And that is kind of where I look at it. Like you can kind of tell when somebody is like foaming at the mouth to get a pick. And at that point, take them for all they're worth and take the uncertainty out of it. Unless you're in a situation where your team is just absolutely atrocious and you need to have a long-term approach.
Good stuff. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on. You know, it's your show. I was asking you questions, but
no, I love it.
This is fun. I hope that we can get together and do a live stream. And we had some questions kind of flow in through Twitter here at the last minute. And then I sent some fillers out in my leagues and that's where a lot of my questions came from. So
Sure. We do appreciate all the live questions. I appreciate you guys' feedback with that. It was just the timing between my life being crazy, David's traveling, there's NBA playoffs going on. So like, I'm pretty sure no one wants to listen to me talk while they could watch Lakers Warriors. So like I am self-aware enough to know better than that, but we will definitely get something together and keep this going. Cause it is fun to answer your guys' questions, especially as we get into draft season and off season where things are just going to be flying all over the place. Changes are going to be made and we will have all of them. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will see you again next time.
Everybody in your crew identifies as either Big Mac Burger, McNuggets, or McCrispy Sandwich. But you're the Filet-O-Fish Sandwich all day. That crispy fish, that savory tartar sauce, that melty cheese, that pillowy bun. Yeah, you get it. Every time.
And if you love the Filet-O-Fish, right now you can catch two of the classics you love for just $6. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.